It's the Ross Tucker Football Podcast.
Oh, yeah, it is. But it's not just any Ross Tucker Football Podcast. It is a Wisdom Wednesday presented by Geeks. Oh, my goodness. Bri, unbelievable. Presented by SeatGeek. I was about to say GeetSeek. Don't go to GeetSeek. Don't download the GeetSeek app. I don't think it exists. It's SeatGeek, the smartest, easiest way to find the best tickets at the best prices to everything from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Plus, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app today. Enter promo code Ross to get $20 off. You guys know the deal with the spread the word winners via social media. You also know the sponsor confirmation email winners and contestants each and every week. Just get the SeatGeek app on your phone. You'll be very, very glad you did, because then anytime you need tickets, boom, it's there. Plus, they'll also email you when they got really good deals in your area, which is huge, because otherwise, how would you know? Anyway, I am bringing on a former, he's a lot of things. I'll just get to it now on the big show.
The big show.
So as promised, I do this, I want to say, about once every 2, maybe 3 years. I bring on one of my close friends. He's a business colleague. He's a former opponent in high school. He's a former teammate in the NFL. He wears a lot of hats, I guess. He's a lot of things. He is Jason Esposito, who spent 3 years in the NFL from 2003 through 2005 and should have spent more time in the NFL than that. We'll get to that momentarily. He goes by Espo. I call him Espo. Everybody that really knows him, I'm guessing, other than maybe his mom and dad and his wife, call him Espo. Espo, how are you?
Good, Ross. How's it going?
Good. So this is, I'm going to say, the third time you've been on the podcast, maybe, over the last 5 years?
Yeah, three or four, something like that.
So, Jason and I grew up, Jason, now I call him Jason after I just did the whole big deal. Espo and I grew up in the same area in Reading, Pennsylvania, in Berks County. He went to the Catholic high school, Holy Name. I went to one of the publics, Wyomissing. He's 2 years younger than me. He ended up going to play Division II football at Kutztown. You guys know what I did. And then we used to work out in the summers. Before we get to that, though, do you remember the first time that you ever saw me or met me?
I think the first time we formally met, I was the playground director at Happy Hollow Playground in Wyomissing, and we were doing our little pool hour allotment of playground, and you came into the pool. I was working with Jack at the time, Orwig. And I think that's when we first like met formally.
Yeah, you know, that might be right. I remember seeing you 3 times my senior year of high school, your sophomore year. I remember before we played you guys in football, I was a senior, you were a sophomore. I remember thinking, it's a pretty decent sized kid, and you had like a broken arm or something. Broken arm, or you had a cast on.
Yeah, I broke my wrist in a JV game and played half the year with the cast that season. Yeah, so that sounds right.
So I didn't remember, you know, I don't even think I knew your name at that point. I just knew you were a pretty decent sized kid and you were looking over at me and I was looking over at you. And then that was football. And then I remember basketball, we were playing at Holy Name. And I'm up in the stands watching the JV game, and you're playing in the JV game, and you were a big kid, you know, 6'3", maybe 220, something like that. And you got every rebound, I think, in the first half. And I remember, you know, the varsity guys would go down to shoot around, you know, at halftime of the JV game, and JD Scheiber, who was the point guard for Holy Name, came up to me and said, "Dude, that Esposito kid has 21 rebounds in the first half."
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't know this. I mean, basketball, that was really my first love as a sport. I didn't play football until ninth grade, so I didn't really know what I was doing, you know, on the football field. Ninth and 10th grade, I was just learning how to play. But basketball, I've been playing basketball since third and fourth grade. So,
well, it's funny that you say that, because I think even through 10th grade, I thought I had a better chance to probably play basketball in college than football. You know, 10th grade, I started offensive tackle, but I was very undersized. And then, you know, in basketball, I had some success. I really thought I was a Division III athlete. And I thought, you know, maybe I could play Division III basketball because I could shoot, and I was 6'2", maybe at the time, and started a few games. So I remember seeing you then, and I actually ended up having a big game that night at Holy Name, and we've talked about that game quite a bit. And then the only other time I remember seeing you was after my last game. I went to friendlies after my last game with a couple of girls, neither one of which was like my girlfriend or anything like that, but just longtime friends that knew that, you know, my last high school sporting event, that would be significant for me. And they said, "All right, let's go to friendlies." So I went with them to friendlies, and you were there with, I think, some Y Missing kids, or maybe it was just some Holy Name kids. And somehow I knew somebody at the table you were at or something. And somebody said, like, "Did you win?" I said, "Yeah." And somebody said, "How many did you have tonight?" I said, 28. And you just had this look on your face like, "Oh, my gosh." Because I had a bunch against you guys, you know, like a week or two earlier or something. So I remember that somehow. It's funny in life what you remember, because I don't really remember what you said about the pool with our mutual friend. But anyway, long story short, we meet. We start working out. And I think I was, you were, was I already in the NFL or was I still in college?
Yeah, no. So you were a rookie. You just were getting home, just, you know, for whatever time you guys had off before camp. And I think I was going into my junior season at Kutztown, where I played in college. And that's when we started working out. So I was still in college. You were in your rookie year.
That's right, and mutual friend Jack Orwig was playing at Westchester, which is another Division II school in Pennsylvania. So we would all start to work out together and do O-line drills, and I remember distinctly telling my agent, "Hey, you should check out this Jason Esposito from Kutztown. Like, he's better than some of the guys that get into training camp, for sure." And he said, "Well, is he related to the Richard Esposito? Because you had been ranked by one of the scouting services as a potential prospect." So you went to New England, and I know a couple years ago we've talked about some of this part of it. And I remember, you know, hearing that things went well, and, you know, you did well against, like, Ty Warren, and then all of a sudden things started to not go as well. What's your recollection of that?
Yeah, I mean, I just think I was pretty young. I was 21, and I want to say, like, a lot of the other rookies were 24, 23. I think the mental part of it caught up to me as camp kind of progressed. So, you know, in New England, they don't give rookies a ton of time to really do anything. So, you know, we got the draft happened. I was an undrafted rookie free agent signed. We had rookie mini camp. I had a week of finals and graduation. I was right back up there that Sunday night. I graduated Saturday, drove up Sunday. We had OTAs Monday, and we were there till, gosh, I want to say June 29th. And then the rookies had to come back July 14th before the start of camp to just kind of lift and work out and stuff before camp. So it just kind of wore on me. And I don't know from a maturity standpoint, if I was ready for that year, because I was, you know, I was a lot younger and playing at Kutztown, it just was different. Not so much the physical part of it, but just the whole mental part of it for me.
So do you mean the grind of camp every day, or do you mean like knowing what to do?
Yeah, not really assignments and stuff like that. I mean, the Patriots, you know, their playbooks is pretty intricate. You were there. We played in different places. I thought it was much more difficult than New England or than Buffalo when I played there. But I just wasn't ready. Maybe bigger schematic things in the playbook. I don't think I was prepared in college, but more of just the meetings. It just was different because we had training camp at Gillette Stadium, so you were there all day. You couldn't go back to your dorm room and lay down for 20 minutes and then, you know, go to the meeting before a second practice or whatever. So just I would say the overall grind, not physical grind, but the mental grind caught up with me.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I think that was maybe one of my greatest strengths was that I handled the grind well, typically. You know, I remember one year I was competing against a couple guys in Buffalo in 04, you know, when you were up there for the starting guard spot. And I remember, you know, the reporters asked about training camp and Mike Mularkey and it's going to be hard. And I remember saying to them, the harder the better. You know, I mean, the harder camp is, the better, because I'm competing with these guys and I feel like that's to my advantage. You know, the more physical it is, the more practices. I just felt like mentally I was going to be mentally tougher than the other guys that were going for that same spot. Speaking of Buffalo, so you ended up getting cut in New England and you were out for a year. And then I remember you came up to Buffalo and you had a workout and evidently it went well enough that they signed you and allocated you to NFL Europe. Now, I've never asked this before, but I don't know if Joe Linta, our agent, would have signed you if I didn't say anything or not. I mean, I know you were listed on the thing, so he at least knew about you. Do you think that you would have gotten the workout in Buffalo and signed if it wasn't the Joe Linta me connection? Do you think that was a total coincidence, or that, you know, that connection helped get the Bills to work you out?
Probably. Yeah, I'm sure it had something to do with it. And I know he had a couple guys up in New England as well. So, you know, smaller school guys. So they, you know, he was trusted with his word and when guys that he signed. So it definitely played a part. Absolutely. And the GM at the time was pretty close to him in Buffalo, I think, right?
Yeah, Tom Donohoe and he had a good relationship. They're both Pittsburgh guys. And I never really thought, I mean, I always assumed that there had to be something to it, but it's like they're not going to give you a workout or sign you because of me. Now, they would because of Joe. And then you went to NFL Europe, and I just remember talking with one of the Bills scouts, and we've talked about this before, who when I asked him how you were doing or how you did at the training camp down there, he just looked at me and said, he's got a long way to go. So I thought, I guess it's not going as well for you down there as I was hoping it was.
Well, that whole scenario was a joke. So I was, I guess, drafted by one team. It was Scotland. And they have different designations when teams send guys to Europe. That's a whole nother conversation. I mean, the league doesn't even exist anymore.
No, say it, because it matters. Say it.
Yeah. So they, you know, they had guys who were maybe on a practice squad the previous season that I was released. You know, they were protected. They were making the team for whatever team drafted them, no matter what. And then there was a group of guys like myself who, you know, we signed with a team, futures contract, you know, the end of the season, whatever. They allocate us to Europe. We're like the second tier. And then there were free agents who were not allocated or signed by any NFL teams over there as well. And then each team had to have like five international players or something like that. So, you know, I go down to camp. I'm doing well in camp. I was starting the entire camp for Scotland at multiple. I mean, they had me at right tackle. They had me playing some guard. I was supposed to be playing center. That's why Buffalo signed me to play, you know, center guard. I played left tackle in college, so I just need to get more reps at the position. But, you know, I was doing well. Camp was over. The head coach called me in and told me I was, like, traded to Frankfurt or something like that to be on their practice squad, which was, I mean, totally came out of nowhere because I was starting the entire NFL Europe training camp. So, you know, the entire thing. And then the team I went to, Frankfurt, they had a really good O-line. I think every one of us after that season at least made a practice squad when we got back to the NFL, to our NFL camps, our training camps. So it was hard for me to even play much with that group. No one really got hurt. You know, they had me playing tight end. We ran a double tight, like a bigger package. So it was just the entire thing was frustrating. But, you know, I think when I look back, and I probably mentioned this to you before, me not playing much actually worked in my favor. My body wasn't that beat up at all. My O-line coach was Don Lawrence, who was the O-line coach for the Bills. All those years they went to the Super Bowl. So just, I was in meetings with him every day. I got to just, you know, more of the mental part of it, some experience there with him. And when I got back to Buffalo, I just felt like I knew more. You know, I felt more comfortable just with, like I said earlier, with the schemes, like the bigger schemes. When I moved from Kutztown to the NFL, I wasn't as comfortable because we didn't do that kind of stuff at Kutztown. So
yeah, I remember, you know, during training camp, you were working with the threes. And I don't really think that you were on the radar screen. I mean, you were doing fine in one-on-ones, but you wouldn't really get that many reps during practice. And the reps you did get, you'd only get like two, and you were doing okay, but I still didn't really think you were in the plans. You know what I mean? Like, you can tell pretty early on who's in the plans and who's kind of not. And it just didn't seem like you were in the plans. And then I'll never forget one day, there were a couple of injuries, and so they needed you to take all the reps with the twos. And you did really well. I mean, you held your own. You did really well. And I remember, it's just so funny, because I tell people how, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted you on, just to talk about how circumstantial careers are, how situational they can be. Like, you highlighted, I think, with that whole Scotland and then Frankfurt thing, and how, you know, for these guys, because they were allocated or whatever, that it worked out that way, and they were protected or whatever that thing was back then. But, like, if those guys don't get hurt, and this happened, by the way, a bunch of times in my career, but if those guys don't get hurt and you don't get all the reps with the twos that day, I don't know that you make the Bills practice squad. But they did get hurt, and you did get those reps, and you basically changed your life right then. Like, that was like, you know, you don't know it. Maybe you do know it at the time. I don't know. But, like, that day was going to determine whether or not you made practice squad or not. Like, if you played bad that day when you were getting the reps with the twos, they would never give you those reps again, and you would just be done. But you did well, so they were like, all right, Espo, good job. And then they, you know, they'd watch you more in one-on-ones. They'd talk to you differently. And I could just tell that then that they thought, you know, that they thought they had seen enough that day and in one-on-ones that I could just tell you're going to be on the practice squad then.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I say this all the time. There have been a couple guys in our hometown, you know, or you hear guys say, well, I didn't get a shot, or, you know, they didn't give me a good enough look. But the reality is, I mean, maybe I always say you're getting a shot. Maybe you don't realize it, but you're getting a shot, you know, and it can happen, like in my situation where a couple guys are down for the day, or, you know, they're injured or whatever the case was at the time. And you just got to step in there and take advantage of the opportunity. So that's really the way I look at the NFL. Everyone has a shot. They just don't some guys don't realize they're getting it when they are.
It's amazing because I think that there's a lot of things like that in life. You know what I mean? Like you think, I think about different media situations or different things that come up. It's like you get a chance and you either do well and get more chances or you don't. And people say, you know, people think, oh, I never got really, really got a chance. You did. You just didn't take advantage of the small chance that you got. Then the next year, you continue to play really. You're on the practice squad for a whole year. The next year, you continue to play for a whole year. And you're on practice squad in Buffalo for another entire year. That was the year they cut me after my back surgery and I got hurt a couple times in camp. They actually cut me in part because they felt pretty good about you, you know, on the practice squad. And if there were injuries, being able to bump you up to the active roster. But what's really crazy to me is you're on the practice squad for 2 years. And then after that season, they don't even sign you to bring you back to camp the next year. Like, because I talk about it on the radio all the time, or I'll talk about like why bad teams are bad. A lot of times it is they're too often making transitions between a new coach, a new GM, new quarterback, or they just, because of the transitions or whatever, they let things like this happen where not only did they invest a decent amount of money in you, but they invested so much time to not even bring you back, you know, and sign you for the 2006 season was just such an absolute waste of resources and time. It's not even funny.
Yeah, the entire thing there, you know, most people don't realize the common, you know, I don't want to say common fan, but when they hear practice squad, they don't understand that. I mean, you're a redshirted player on the team because there's, what are there, 10 spots now?
Yep.
Is that how many there are? So there, I think there were
11,
five.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there were five. And then my first year in Buffalo, they bumped it up to 8. And then a couple years, you know, then they kept adding some spots, but, that entire thing, you know, how that went down. I mean, that kind of, I don't want to, they just weren't doing things the right way at the time. I mean, you talk about that whole year with the both of us. I mean, realistically, we both probably should have been on the active roster and there should have been some other guys on the practice squad based on performance. So, but you know, teams, they kind of handle their situations differently, and that's.
Oh, you can say it. What was the kid's name from Vanderbilt?
Oh, Justin Geisinger.
Justin Geisinger.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was terrible.
He was absolutely terrible.
And look, he's a nice guy. He went to Vanderbilt. He was strong as an ox, but he ended up playing in the league for a few years, so he got better. But during that particular training camp, he was terrible. Terrible.
Right. The ironic thing about him is the next season, what happened to us happened to him. So he was on the active roster for the whole season, his rookie year. And I think they put him on the practice squad the next year. So, you know, we needed tackles. I'm sitting there watching the draft and they take a center, they take a guard. I'm just like, wow, you know, you're watching your fate just right before your eyes when you're watching a draft as a guy, you know, that's in the league.
Yeah, I remember I'd had a back surgery that week, and I saw that, and I thought, not good. You know, it's funny the thoughts that go through your head. Like, I think sometimes, like, maybe I should have said to them, like, pretend like my back was fine until after the draft, you know?
Yeah, so they're not planning ahead with that.
Like, maybe I should have just, like, lied and been like, no, my back's fine. I feel great. Then right after the draft, be like, man, it's acting up on me. Because then maybe they wouldn't have drafted two linemen like that, you know? Or maybe they wouldn't have signed Benny Anderson in free agency like they did. It's just funny the things that go through your head in those situations. I know I've asked you one of these questions before on the podcast a couple years ago, but we also have a bunch of new listeners. I want to ask you two more questions. One I know we haven't asked you. One is, when you were on the practice squad, did you feel like you were on the team?
Yeah, basically, if you're a practice, I mean, and it varies, because I know some teams will actually let the practice squad guys travel to away games, but that's really the only thing everything else I did with the Bills, day-to-day, home games, I just didn't travel to away games. So, meetings, everything was the same. I just didn't have as much wear and tear on my body from playing Sundays.
What did you do for home games?
For home games, they had us up in the press box, so they didn't really have us on the sidelines at all, but we were just up. There was an area for guys that were either injured or on the practice squad.
I don't even remember ever talking to you about that or asking you about that. I didn't even did you come to every home game?
Yeah, so we would go typically. We would go work out over at the weight room, and then we would head over to the stadium, which is just right across the parking lot, and maybe go on the field before the game, or in the locker room, then head upstairs. And they, as doing media stuff, they have the buffet and everything for the media. So I would just crush that and just watch the game.
That's interesting. I never asked you about that. Now, when you look back on your NFL career, do you look back on it fondly? Do you look back on it negatively? Would you say you're happy, disappointed, satisfied with your career? How would you, when people ask you about it that you've never met before, if you're talking to your wife or your in-laws about it, how do you think about it?
So I would say I try to downplay it. The only things that I regret, I was more prepared for that first training camp. I feel like if I would have went to New England a year later, just being a more mature person, things might have turned out differently, because they did like me there. The O-line coach liked me there. I was doing well to start camp, like you mentioned. So that, that's really the only regret I have there. And then, the end of it, I really had no control over it. I'm a little bitter about that with, the player personnel guy at the time telling me they're re-signing me, send my contract in the mail. He gives me a call. We're not re-signing you now. At the time, I think the Bills had fired the GM, and Mike Mularkey was kind of making all the personnel calls as the head coach. I think he fired a couple coaches after the season. And then, after he determined my fate, he resigns. So he wasn't even the head coach. And then I think they brought in Dick Geron. So, I was a little how that all went down. I don't know because as we mentioned earlier, the GM was friends with our agent. And I suspect I wasn't really moved to another team because they liked me. They liked me as a developmental guy. And, Joe and the GM had a good relationship. So, which I was fine with. It was kind of having some job security. But, at the end of the day, when he was gone, I ended up getting screwed.
I would be pretty bitter about how your career ended, because that would be tough for me to swallow, because you didn't, I always said I would have wanted to, I wanted it to end with me going down swinging. You know what I mean? I could handle it if I went to a training camp and got cut. I actually went to a training camp and ended up getting hurt with the Redskins, which, even though you never want to get hurt, mentally it was actually better for me. It was okay, I hurt my neck pretty bad. I shouldn't play anymore. It really gave me a sense of closure. If I was in your situation, I feel like I never would have gotten that. I'd be real, like, I would have wanted to go down with my guns blazing. You know what I mean? And so I think you have every right to be bitter about it. My last question is, you're a coach now. You're the offensive line coach at Berks Catholic High School. You have a really good team. Is there anything now that you coach that you think, man, if I knew this when I was a player, if I looked at it this way, I could have been a better player? Like, if you were 26 now and in the prime of your athletic career, but you had been the coach at offensive line at Berks Catholic the last 3 years, is there anything that you think would help make you a better player now that you've seen it from the coaching side for a few years?
I mean, the only thing I would say, that whole, I don't know if this relates to your question, but the entire last year with the Bills, I was very thankful that I was on the practice squad, but that was a tough year when you see a guy that you know you played better than, and it's on tape, and he's on the active roster. So that whole year, there was just some bitterness, and I was playing D-line as a practice squad guy that year. It was crazy, man. Like, and Malarkey was getting pissed at me because I wasn't going hard enough playing D-line. I don't even play D-line. Now, I played D-line in high school, but, you know, I don't know what I'm doing, really. You know, I play center, guard, whatever. So that whole year was a little bit interesting. But, you know, as far as knowing what I know as a coach now, seeing kids, and I would say you just got to really have fun with it, because the only time I really had fun and just said, I don't care, this could be the last time I ever snap a football, I was down in Miami for a rookie mini camp. They brought down a bunch of guys. It was after Buffalo. And, you know, we're doing QB center exchange, and I just thought to myself, you know what, this could be the last time I ever have a helmet on, I ever snap a football, I don't know if I'm going to get signed. And, you know, I just think if I would have approached it even more so like that, you know, things could have maybe been different as well. I don't know. Who knows?
That's interesting. Yeah, even just hearing you say that, I get the chills about, you know, never getting a chance to, and the last time you get a chance to put on the helmet and shoulder pads. That's a really good point. And you get closer to it now than I do as a coach. That's closer to it than I am as a broadcaster. I might bring you on again, you know, at some point over the next course of the year, because there's a couple more questions I could even ask you. But I like to bring you on every couple years to, I think, just to talk to people. You know, I feel like careers are really situational, circumstantial. But when you're talking about yourself, it's like, well, you're just saying that because that's what happened to you. So to me, it's like better to get a different example. Like, all right, I'll get Espo on because it's not me. So it's not like I'm talking about myself. It's somebody else who also had something very similar. And I don't know about very similar, but can speak to how circumstantial it really is. Like how, you know, Malarkey has the power for a week after Donahoe gets fired before he resigns, and that stops you from ever getting signed again. You know, you go to Miami like on a tryout basis. You go to with Saban. You go to Seattle for a workout, but you never really got another chance after that. And I know you can say you got a chance in Miami, but that went really well, and you still didn't get signed after it.
Right, and even that was in May. And the Seattle thing, I was getting a physical, and we talked about this before. And I went out there, worked out, ran well, all that for, you know, 5-hour plane flight out there, getting a physical. Next thing you know, the little personnel guy or whoever intern helping out, driving me around, gets a call. He's taking me back to the airport. I'm flying back to Reading. So that's how quickly it was really over for me personally.
Crazy, man. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. You got it. Thanks.
Tux Takes.
So the Tux Takes will sound a little bit different today and tomorrow with Brian traveling. He is chaperoning his son's field trip. So, Bri, nice work being a stud dad. I'll start with the Colin Kaepernick news that the Seahawks reached out to him on Friday. Pete Carroll said on Monday that they were interested in him and RG3 potentially as a backup for Russell Wilson. It's a lot to digest here. I think, number one, I think the timing is a little curious. You know, last Thursday, evidently, Shannon Sharp said that Colin Kaepernick told him not a single team had reached out to him or his agent. And then the next day, the Seahawks do? That timing, I think, is curious for some. But I'll also say that this is a time of year, now that it doesn't count for compensatory picks anymore, that teams start to supplement their roster. I mean, I'll get into it in a little bit, but the Texans signed Breno Giacomini yesterday to help at right tackle. The Browns signed Jason McCourty. So this isn't like unheard of for teams to try to fill out their roster this time of year. It just does seem like interesting timing, given that Shannon Sharp had just come out and said that Kaepernick, you know, nobody had reached out to him. I do think Kaepernick makes perfect sense in Seattle as a backup quarterback. They need someone instead of Trevon Boykin. I mean, Trevon Boykin got in trouble two or three times this offseason. You can't have that from a backup quarterback. I mean, you can't have a guy that, number one, has never played. Number two, you know, now he's getting in trouble off the field. I mean, give me a break, right? So I think Kaepernick would be a great fit there. Plus, I know Russell Wilson's never missed a game and he finds a way to play, but that might happen at some point. And having a guy like Kaepernick there, let's say Russell Wilson misses four games, Kaepernick has a similar skill set that I think, you know, he could win a couple of those games in Seattle. Plus, those guys have played against him when he was really playing well in San Francisco. So I like that fit quite a bit. I also have never really thought that Kaepernick was being quote-unquote blackballed. I don't think people really know what that word means. That essentially is collusion, and that the entire league got together to say, hey, let's not sign this guy. It wouldn't be good for the league. That's what being blackballed would be. I don't think that's the case. I think every individual team has made the decision. I think a lot of them have just said, yeah, look, a backup quarterback is not worth alienating 50% of our customers, which I understand. So anyway, we'll see what happens with Colin Kaepernick, but at least right now the Seahawks have expressed some interest. I think he's far, far superior to RG3. I think RG3 is probably done.
Tux Takes.
Some injury news to get to as well with Vince Beagle and Deion Buchanan, I should say, the safety-turned linebacker in Arizona, had a lingering injury that I think they hoped would heal on its own, but it wasn't, so he had surgery. Bruce Arians said they hope he's back by the first game. Vince Beagle was a fourth-round pick for the Packers. He broke his foot. So we already have rookie camps. It's going to happen. You know, with the OTAs and the full squad mandatory mini camps, it's going to happen where other guys get injured as well. But now we've got a couple of fourth-round picks. The kid from the Browns, the corner, as well as now Beagle, the linebacker, out of Wisconsin. In terms of transactions, the Chargers cut Orlando Franklin since Monday's podcast. What I like about that is they understand the concept of a sunk cost. He is a sunk cost. You know, the $3.5 million fully guaranteed for Orlando Franklin this year, it's a sunk cost. You know, you don't keep him on the roster and pay him the other $2.5 million. If you don't think he's going to start, you don't think he's worth it, just because you owe him $3.5 million guaranteed. That's a pretty common business concept. It's called a sunk cost. Move on, and hopefully somebody else signs him and takes you off some of the financial obligation. I mentioned the Texans feel like they need to get better at right tackle, giving Giacomini a shot, and the Browns signing Jason McCourty. I think that's big, just the type of guy he is. And also, I think that is yet another sign that they're trying to find value and trying to show progress this year, which I really like from the Cleveland Browns. Another move that I like.
Tux Takes.
Two other noteworthy news items include the Bills hiring Brian Gain to be their VP of player personnel. You know, the Texans, he used to be with the Texans. He's well thought of. The Texans didn't need to let him go. Unless you're going to have control of the 53-man roster and be the GM, they don't have to let you go, but it definitely was a promotion for him. So kudos to the Texans for letting him go in the first place. I am not a fan of preventing people from upward mobility. So I like that. I'm appreciative that the Texans were willing to let someone advance in their career. I also think the Bills are building a pretty good front office there. And I like Sean McDermott quite a bit. So I'm kind of fired up about the moves that the Bills are making. Conversely, kind of a scary situation. Chiefs first round pick Patrick Mahomes was robbed at gunpoint in his hometown of Tyler, Texas. Pretty crazy, huh, to get robbed in your hometown like that right after you're a first round pick. A lot of times, you know, people, you know, stay away from guys like that, you know, because they're proud of them and it's a positive thing for the community. Evidently, not the case in Tyler, Texas. But they did catch the guys, recover the wallet. So, not the brightest criminals, evidently, in Tyler, Texas. Finally, I think I said I would announce the Spread the Word winner this week, a little bit later in the podcast. It's Tom Ayer, who evidently is a Civil War historian or buff. Awesome. Tom Ayer, A-Y-E-R. Tom, appreciate the retweet of the Even Money podcast yesterday from Brian's handle, at RTF Podcast. I'm, of course, at Ross Tucker NFL. And my Facebook, facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. Anyway, Tom, thank you very much. You know the deal. Hopefully, email me your address. I'll send you a little something in the mail, signed card or signed picture, whatever. And tomorrow we will get to the sponsor confirmation email winner.
That'll do it. No emails today. That was a long interview with my buddy Espo. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. I like having some of these longer conversations we've had recently with Andrew. I think tomorrow with Evan might be pretty long as well, hopefully. So I'm enjoying it. I hope you guys are as well. That'll do it for a Wisdom Wednesday edition of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Appreciate those of you that send in those emails. Please, please, please tell your friends about it. Anything you can do with the Amazon banner ad orders, those are awesome. Thank you so much for those. Spread the word via social media. You know that. And as well as the emails. I'll get to at least one tomorrow, I promise. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Fantasy Feast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.